by stealing, driving him mad. You'd think she'd be cheeky enough to hide the stolen items in her room. Couldn't hurt to look. Some people stole just for the thrill. It could hurt. It could hurt her. They were at an impasse. Tara fell silent. Danny looked around the cottage. Strange to be in here. Do you think he'd mind that I'm staying here? He must have known you were coming. At first Tara didn't know why he said that. She caught him staring at the space on the wall where her name had been scrawled. He caught her staring at him. The cleaning crew sent me a photo. He stood and went over to the spot. Here? Yes, Tara said. In blood. Emmett's blood? Tara nodded again. I assume so. It was horrific. Why? Danny wondered out loud. What was he trying to tell you? Warn me? To get away? Emmett was already dead. Who was he worried about? The killer? Tara said, assuming it wasn't Johnny. But how does writing your name do anything to warn you? I don't know. I didn't even come into the cabin. But had I come into the cabin and seen my name, I think it would have made me run. Danny continued to stare at the wall. He knew you were coming. Tara went to the window. She didn't want to look at that wall. I didn't tell him I was coming. And as far as I know, my mother hadn't spoken to him in years. And yet somehow, he, or someone, knew. I wish I knew what really happened here. What he had been trying to tell me. Danny sighed and glanced at the floor. This would only take a few days. We could wait for a spell of nice weather and move all the furniture onto the lawn. Go ahead and order the flooring, Tara said. I'll use my credit card. I don't have access to Johnny's accounts. I'll get you a good deal. He moved in closer. They stared at each other. She wondered if he was thinking about kissing her. She wanted him to, but something told her it was a bad idea. They were working together. He was the only person here who seemed to like her. She didn't want to mess that up. She made a point of yawning. Danny took the cue right away. I better go. He started to put the dishes in the sink. I can get those, Tara said. It'll only take a minute and I'll be out of your hair. He began to do the dishes. Now she really wanted to kiss him. I could never come in here when Johnny was around. Why is that? The mess. The pile of dishes always in the sink. I told him to hire someone to do his washing, but he was too prideful. Tara tried to remember her first entrance into the cottage. She didn't remember a pile of dirty dishes. Then again, her eyes were glued to her name splashed across the back wall. Even so, she had an eye for spaces. She would have noticed an inordinate amount of dirty dishes. Had Johnny recently gone from being a slob to being neat? If so, why the change? I think the kitchen was tidy when I went in. Danny cocked his head. That's a first. Do you think the crime scene clean-up crew would have washed dirty dishes? The minute it came out of her mouth, she heard how ridiculous it sounded. Danny stopped and looked at her. No, I don't. Me neither. Danny shrugged. Maybe he hired someone after all, or finally got around to washing them. It was a bit puzzling, but there was no use wasting time on it. If he had hired a person to clean, they hadn't come forward. She'd keep her eyes and ears open. Danny finished the dishes and soon Tara was holding open the door for him. Thank you. She reached for him and gave him a hug. He held on to her for a beat too long. She pulled back. He smiled down at her. For what? The fishing, the meal. You almost choked to death on a piece of glass. I can still be polite. Danny threw his head back and laughed. Are you free on Friday? All day. Was he asking her on a date? Why? I'm getting a group together to go to Leisureland. Leisureland? It's in Salt Hill. Rides and games and burgers and the sea. What's the occasion? It's summer, Miss America. Remember, summer? She laughed. Barely. See, this murder has our customers on edge. It would be a nice way to keep them loyal, and it wouldn't hurt to have a bit of crack. Not a date, but Tara liked the sound of it. Maybe she could also learn more about what was going on around here. Could I invite some people? Like who? She shrugged like she hadn't given it any thought at all. Rose, Alana, Ben Kelly, Carrig Murray, and Grace Quinn? Danny's eyes narrowed. In other words, you want to round up the suspects. He really was sharp. She blinked and tried to look innocent. Do you really think Grace Quinn could be a killer? She knew my mother, Tara said. She might have other answers I'm looking for. Danny registered that but stayed silent. Do you think you'll get them by inviting her to the fair? I'm just trying to be a good neighbour. Good luck getting Grace to leave the inn. I've only seen her do that for bingo night. Danny was already gone when Tara realised she forgot to tell him about the stem without a rose that someone left by the door. It was a good thing she hadn't. When she went back out to have a second look at it, it was gone. Chapter 12. Leisureland in the seaside town of Salt Hill was abuzz with sugar and grease, and laughter and screams, and colourful blinking lights and rides that twirled and jerked, all encapsulated by a single word, summer. All the folks on Tara's list had agreed to the day out, including Rose, who had sat at the back of the small bus they had chartered and hadn't engaged in any conversation. Tara was determined to change that by the day's end. Alana was dressed in a short skirt and tank top, and Tara had a pretty good idea why. Her eyes were a heat-seeking device, and the target was Danny. If she was dating another woman, she was doing a good job of pretending to be infatuated with Danny O'Donnell. And if Alana had accidentally cooked a piece of salmon with a shard of glass in it, she was certainly waiting a long time to apologise. Maybe Danny hadn't mentioned it to her. Otherwise, shouldn't she be receiving something along the "sorry I almost killed you" lines? Tara made a mental note to never turn her back to the girl. Ben Kelly went straight for a carnival dart game, followed by muscular young men from his boxing ring. They were all such compact athletes, so much bounce. Tara wanted to take a nap just looking at them. She noted how they excluded Alana, who could probably outpunch all of them. Tara slipped in behind Ben Kelly when Danny was preoccupied. She wanted to observe the suspects without anyone's watchful gaze. Ben Kelly threw dart after dart, hitting the bullseye. His crowd of aspiring boxers whooped, and the kid manning the booth grew more petrified with each cheap stuffed animal he was forced to turn over. "You're really good at that," Tara said, stepping up. His eyes flicked over her. "Thanks. You wouldn't be wanting one, would you?" She stared at the hideous blue gorilla. "I'm good." A group of young women strolled by and Ben Kelly tossed the stuffed animals to them. They screeched and giggled, and Ben grinned and nodded, his eyes trailing them as they swished away, all hips and hair. Tara wondered what Alana would think of her father, not only not saving one for her, but shamelessly flirting with women young enough to be his daughters. And he was accusing Johnny Meehan of being a lech? "Hello, pot. Kettle here." "I stopped by your boxing ring the other day," Tara said. "I left you a note." Ben Kelly didn't make eye contact with her. "I'm going to get a burger. If you want to follow me and have a chat, I won't stop you." Her stomach growled at the mention of a burger, and she followed, silently reprimanding herself for reacting like one of Pavlov's dogs. Then again, she hadn't eaten all day, unless coffee could be counted as a food group. She had decided to pace herself with the blueberry scones that were as big as a baby's head. She only had one set of clothes with her, and she wasn't keen to size up. The line was sufficiently long to allow Tara to chat up Ben Kelly. Tara was trying to figure out how to get his alibi without the cliché, "Where were you on the morning of?" Maybe she'd start with the question he didn't seem to want to answer. "Did you get my note the other day?" This time Ben Kelly did make eye contact, and his look was so searing Tara took a step back. "You're actually going to cop to it?" "Excuse me?" "You think sticking gum to a man's door is a polite thing to do?" "I'm so sorry." Darn, she'd forgotten about that. Ben Kelly certainly held a grudge. "I didn't want the note to get lost." He shook his head. "What do you want?" "I've heard from a lot of people that you weren't happy with my uncle, and that you've been trying to get him to sell the mill." He stared straight ahead at the men flipping burgers inside the truck, his fists clenched at his sides. "It's the perfect spot for a boxing school. I offered him good money." "Were you angry that he wouldn't sell?" "Angry enough to kill him. Is that what you're getting at?" "Why would you say that? My uncle is a missing person, not a murder victim." "Unless you know something we don't." A shiver ran through Tara despite the midday heat. Ben Kelly wiped his brow with his hand, then wiped his hand on his shorts. "Yes, I was angry. He was a stubborn old man." Tara started. "Was?" Ben sighed. "Don't go reading into that. Is. He is a stubborn old man." Had it been an innocent error? Or did he know something sinister had happened to Johnny? "How are you any different?" He registered the dig with a calm blink. "He could move that warehouse of junk anywhere. With the money I was offering, he could have retired." "Doesn't sound like he wanted to retire." "He was just doing it to spite me." "Was he now?" Ben Kelly was one of those people who thought everything was about him. "Have you been to the warehouse? You might be surprised that it's well organized and vibrant." "Are you joking me? It's a junk heap." "It's hardly a junk heap." "That's the American point of view, is it?" He was getting under her skin. "Who do you think you are to demand someone else move their established business?" "Now, just a minute. One my family has owned for a very long time." Tara didn't know where it came from, this passion, this family connection, but it bubbled up in her as real as anything she'd ever known. Perhaps that was the power of family, a connection forged by blood and DNA, a bond that held even if you'd never met face to face. "Who do you think you are? You show up out of nowhere, Miss America, and think you have a right to speak to me like that?" He shook his head. "Bugger off." "Lovely." Tara was starting to feel sorry for Alana. "Where were you in the morning Emmett was killed?" Sometimes a cliché developed for a reason. He didn't seem in the mood to give much up. He laughed, then stopped when he saw she was serious. "I was at the ring, if you want. I can give you the names of 10 lads I was training." He stepped forward into her personal space. "I have a sweaty, unshakable alibi." "Were all your students in attendance that morning?" "What is it you do for a living, Ms. Meehan?" Tara took a deep breath. "I'm an interior designer." "I'm afraid I have no need for your services. But if you keep questioning me like you're a detective sergeant, we're going to have a problem." "I'm trying to find my uncle. He could be hurt or not in his right mind." "Ah, rest assured he is not in his right mind. What if it were a member of your family who was missing?" His cold eyes flicked over her. "When this business is all over, I'll extend the same offer to you. It's a solid price." I hope you're not actually suggesting I sell the mill right out from under my missing uncle. Your uncle is a murderer. He's not going to come back. And if he does, it'll be in handcuffs. Why are you so sure he did it? Because, unlike you, I know the man. He was losing his mind, and Emmett Walsh was furious. He stormed up the hill that morning, and Johnny must have panicked. They were next in line. Tara paid for Ben Kelly's 3 cheeseburgers and curry chips, plus 1 of her own. Instead of thanking her, he glowered. Why are you doing that? To make up for the gum. He barely grunted, then shoved a cheeseburger into his mouth. Tara watched in horror as he finished it in 2 bites before starting on the next one. He laughed. Start boxing, and you too can have this metabolism. He started to walk away. Why is Alana living above the mill? She asked. He turned, and from his scowl he wasn't happy about it. I told her to stay away from that man. Was she keeping an eye on him for you? You heard me, did you not? I wouldn't be wanting her anywhere near him now. Because she told you he was leering at her? If you know so much, why are you talking to me? I'm just trying to get my facts straight. I guess you didn't bring us here to get to know us. That one hit its mark. I did, she said. I'm sorry. Enjoy the fair. She could feel his eyes on her as she walked away. She took a bite of the cheeseburger. It was perfect. Maybe she should just relax and enjoy the fair too. While her uncle was out there, somewhere, alone, and probably afraid. Without a family member left in the world but her. After that, the burger lost most of its taste. Carrigmurray was tossing coins into the mouths of tiny bottles. His aim was spot on. Didn't he claim to have problems with his sight? He wasn't wearing glasses. Had that been a lie? Great aim. He whirled around and stared at Tara. It took him a moment to place her.
Miss Meehan, he grinned. This was a wonderful idea. Thank you.
You're welcome. I thought you were nearsighted.
Pardon?
He began to blink rapidly. You couldn't read the print in the notebook I tried to show you. The D or G next to my uncle's note about going to Inishmore. But here you are, successfully tossing coins into the tiny mouths of bottles from several feet away. He squinted, but this time out of confusion.
I've been to the eye doctor since, he said. They sorted me out.
What's the name of the eye doctor?
Why?
I could use a checkup.
I'm terrible with names. I'll be wanting to get back to you on that.
You're not wearing glasses.
Contact lenses, little miracles they are.
Odd that for a director who, I assume, needs to read scripts all day, you only recently sorted out your eyesight.
What does my eyesight have to do with the price of tea in China?
Can you please answer my question about why Johnny wrote the letter D, or, as you suggested, G, in his notebook after Inishmore?
I suggested, did I? Probably just trying to be polite. Why on earth would I have any idea what your uncle was trying to write?
His blinking continued. Drops of sweat beaded on his broad forehead. Tara closed the step between them. Who are you talking to that day on the phone? He retrieved a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped his brow.
I don't remember. Why?
She shrugged. I was just curious. Sounded like a heated argument. I believe you said his name was George? She was taking a risk, pushing him. But he was hiding something, and she was curious. He glared at her.
Previously you stated you hadn't heard a word of it.
Shoot. He had her there. I didn't want you to think I was purposefully eavesdropping. Not my fault if you have a booming voice. She shrugged. Can't help that I'm curious. He suddenly straightened up, his face hardening. The fear was gone, and now he was going to act tough. Which man was the real Carrig Murray? The nervous one, with bad eyesight, or the seething director? Why did she get the feeling there was more than one production he was directing? Don't get too curious, he said with a wink. Just remember what it did to the cat. With that, he strode away from her without so much as a backward glance. One thing was clear. The mysterious friend he had been speaking to on the phone could most likely be found on Inishmore. Tara was cutting through the crowd, trying to spot Rose when she felt a hand on her waist and a male voice in her ear. There you are. Danny. God, that Irish accent. She could see why it was named sexiest accent in the world, like every year in a row. It was hard not to melt. Even as a young girl, she was furious she didn't have her mother's beautiful lilting accent. I don't sound like you. Many a night she literally threw a fit over it. Ah, pet, you don't want to sound like me. You sound like you. Feisty, wonderful, you. Now, put the kettle on and leave me to a bit of peace, will you, pet? The memory made her smile. She turned to see Danny, dimple flashing in the sun. Why do I get the feeling you're not really here to have a good time? I am, she said. I ate a cheeseburger. He laughed. You had a cheeseburger with Ben Kelly, and then had a heated chat with Carrig Murray. Heated? I could see the steam coming off him from over here. Just being neighbourly. What did you learn about our suspects? I don't know what you mean. Am I a suspect? She made the mistake of maintaining eye contact with him. There was a twinkle there, and a bit of a challenge. And then there was that other thing, that current. She found herself looking at his mouth, still sporting an easygoing smile. God, that zing. That tug of desire reflected in his eyes. It could get a girl in trouble. She took a physical step back and looked away. Why don't we go on a ride? He said. Was that meant to have a double meaning? Or was she losing her mind over his handsome face and cute Irish accent? A player. Oh my God, I'm losing it. Thank God Grace Quinn wasn't here to witness it. Tara turned red as she remembered Grace Quinn actually was here. Her head whipped around to see if she could spot her. Was she hiding behind a puff of cotton candy, spying on her? Oh no, was I smiling? Every time she was around Danny, her mouth spontaneously stretched open. It was embarrassing. But it wasn't her fault. It was his. That charm of his was a deadly weapon. That's okay. I just ate. He grabbed her hand and started pulling her along. The Dodgems. The Dodgems? She looked ahead where colourful cars were slamming into each other. Oh, bumper cars. Bumper cars, he said, making fun of her and lightly bumping her hip. Your stomach can take that at least. From the glint in his eye, Danny wasn't going to take no for an answer. I'm a terrible driver, she joked as he led the way. I'm counting on it. She had to admit, the bumper cars, or Dodgems, were fun. There was nothing like slamming into complete strangers to get out a little aggression. Danny, she noticed, liked to sneak up and slam into her at the last minute. She turned the wheel, preparing to get him back, when suddenly, Alana was in a car coming straight for her. The look in her eye was unmistakable, unadulterated rage. Tara's car took the blow, her head snapped back, and her ear started to ring, or was that just the sound of Alana's laughter echoing through her head? Alana zoomed her little car after Danny. Tara stepped on the gas, even as her brain told her not to be so childish, and she made a beeline for the back of Alana's shiny red bumper car. She slammed into it at the top speed allowed.
Good one, Danny said,
flashing a smile and forcing Alana to laugh it off.
She needs to get you back for that sliver of glass in the salmon.
So he had mentioned it. Alana's eyes widened as she stared at Tara.
Sliver,
Tara said. It was a shard. Alana continued to stare without a word. Adrenaline pumped through Tara. She was not going to get into it with the girl here and now. Did she try to kill me? She maneuvered her car to the exit and stepped out on wobbly legs. She glanced back at Alana, who was zooming in on Danny again. The girl was absolutely obsessed. Did Danny realize the extent of it? Had they seen Fatal Attraction over here? That girl was one pot away from boiling a bunny. Maybe it was time Alana found a new place to live. Tara didn't want to deal with her jealousy. Would it do any good to tell her that he just wasn't into her? Probably not. Was it as simple as her being young and in love? Or had she been mucking about the mill at night? If so, why? Her alibi would be easy enough to check. She claimed to be at cookery school. She remembered Johnny's notation in his book. Tara was going to have to visit her instructor, find out if Johnny had done the same thing, and why. Danny caught up with Tara again and tried to get her to go on the Ferris wheel. Tara looked up at the seat, resting at the very top, swaying gently. And she thought about heights. And she thought about falling. And she thought about her son. She jerked her hand back, startling Danny.
No,
she said. Never. I wasn't there to catch him. He took it all in, the flash of pain across her face.
Okay,
he said. He put his hands up. Sorry.
You scared of heights?
Alana belted out. Suddenly, they were all standing behind her. Carrig and Ben Kelly. And Alana and Grace and Rose and Danny. It was her turn to feel under the spotlight. To have sweat gathering on her brow.
Leave her be, Danny scolded her.
Alana was stung. You could see it. But she didn't say another word. Tara was so grateful. Grief still had a way of grabbing her and squeezing hard, and even she was surprised at how it manifested. She felt always on the edge of a nervous breakdown. Now with her mother's death and the murder. I'm sorry, Alana said, stepping forward. She took Tara's hand. I've been so mean. I don't know why I'm like this. It sounded honest. Had Tara been too hard on the girl? That's okay. Alana put her hand on her heart. And I am so mortified about the piece of glass in your salmon.
Oh, Tara said. It was quite a shock.
I was drinking a glass of wine. It shattered while I was cooking. I guess one of the pieces fell into the fish without me knowing.
That's what Danny thought.
Exactly. Had they rehearsed the details? She had to sit down on a nearby bench. She felt dizzy. It must be the heat and that twirling Ferris wheel. Make it stop.
I'll sit with you, Grace Quinn said. Off with ye.
Grace waited until everyone was gone to slip her something. Tara looked down. It was a letter. Tara started to open it. She felt Grace's fingers dig into her hand.
Don't read it here, she said. Put it in your handbag for later.
What is it?
It's the last time I heard from your mother,
Grace said. Tara's heart began to tap dance. Just the thought of a new letter written by her mother was like a little gift, unless it wasn't a happy letter. When was it written? What did it say? Tara slipped it into her purse and scanned the fairgrounds. Thank you.
What are you going to do if he doesn't come back? How long are you going to stay?
Tara turned to Grace. I hope you don't think me rude. But every time an Irish person asks me that, it feels like rejection. Like you can't wait for me to go home. Grace sighed.
Your mother wasn't happy here,
she said, patting Tara on the knee.
And you are your mother's daughter.
Tara was figuring out how to respond and what Grace's true agenda was when she saw a flash of long salt and pepper hair disappear into the funhouse. This was her chance to talk to Rose. "Nice speaking with you, Grace," she said. She gave a friendly wave and took off for the funhouse. Chapter 13. As soon as she entered the funhouse, Tara was bombarded with her reflection in a wall of distorted mirrors. In the first panel, she was so thin, it looked as if her skeletal body could slip through a keyhole. In the next, she was so fat, it looked as if she had burst through the walls. She stared at her stretched-out cheeks, her enormous thighs. "This is me, but not me. Definitely no more scones. Or scones every other day. That was reasonable." It was dark in the hallways between frights, and there was no sign of Rose. All she could hear were a few faint screams from within and the relentless drip of water. Striped colours swirled on the walls and the floor, making you feel as if the room had suddenly tilted. Tara stumbled. Piped laughter filtered through as she fumbled in the dark. A screech sounded as the shadow of a monkey suddenly swung along the wall. She put her hand on the rail and felt something squishy. Despite herself, she gave a little scream. The sound of thunder boomed, and for a split second the place lit up with what was supposed to mimic a flash of lightning. Hovering directly in front of Tara was a disembodied face with flashing red eyes. She screamed again. These places had grown sophisticated since she was a kid. She tried to pick up speed, just wanting it to be over. She could see an exit sign up ahead. She bolted for it. Forget Rose. She'd find her at the caravan later. She was almost at the door with the exit sign above it when she sensed someone behind her. Before she could turn around, she felt a gloved hand slap over her mouth. She could smell the thick leather. Was it part of the act? They weren't allowed to touch people, were they? She immediately started to squirm, but the hand over her mouth tightened. Why are they wearing gloves? She felt herself being pulled backwards into the middle of the funhouse. Tara wanted to scream or bite, but the hand was clamped too tight over her mouth. She tried to kick, but she couldn't without losing her balance. It was too dark to see a single thing. She stopped, struggling until the hand over her mouth relaxed slightly, and then she bit the hand as hard as she could. The hand jerked away, and the attacker shoved her hard into a new group of people swarming their way into the funhouse. At first, they thought she was part of the experience, squealing as her body stumbled in front of them, jumping out of the way. Tara landed on the sticky floor, slamming her lip into the concrete.
"Are you okay?"
Someone grabbed under her arms and hauled her up. She stared into Carrig Murray's face.
"Someone attacked me," she said.
Carrig was not wearing gloves, but how had he gotten there so fast? Could he be her attacker?
"Hold on to me," he said. "I'll get you out."
She hesitated, then took his arm. She thought about running ahead, but it was too dark. Her lip stung, and she had twisted her ankle on the way down. By the time she got out of the funhouse and caught her breath, whoever attacked her was either long gone or standing right beside her, pretending to be concerned. He nodded to her lip.
"You're going to need some ice on that."
"Where were you?" she asked. "The morning Emmett Walsh was killed." He laughed, as if she was joking, then stopped. He took a step toward her.
"You have a funny way about you," he said.
If she searched his pockets, would she find a pair of gloves? Who had he been talking to when she came back into the theatre that day? "I didn't tell her a thing, and neither will you." What wasn't he telling her? What were several people not telling her? "Enjoy the fun house." She whirled around to find Rose standing in front of her, black hair blowing in the wind.
"I'll leave you to it,"
Carrig said, then hurried off before she could figure out a legitimate reason to pat him down.
"Someone attacked me in there," Tara said.
Her hands were still shaking.
"I warned you,"
Rose said, adjusting a canvas bag slung over her body.
If you stay here, this is only the beginning.
Suddenly Tara thought of the cans of paint she'd seen near the caravan the first day she'd arrived. Was Rose the one who painted Go Home Yankee on the barn?
I heard you were dating my uncle. I want to talk to you about him.
Rose's eyes darted around the fair. Not now. Not here.
When?
Tara asked.
Where?
My caravan, Rose said. Tomorrow morning. I'll read your cards. Was this a bait and switch? A scam?
Rose looked genuinely frightened, and even if it was a scam, Tara would pay for a reading just to get a chance to talk to her. She did know things, real things, about her uncle.
I'll be there, she said.
What time?
8:30, Rose said, and not a minute later.
When Danny caught up with Tara, she was still shaking. Reluctantly, she told him what happened.
We have to call the guards, he said.
She shook her head. I'm fine.
It's not just about you. There's someone hiding out in the funhouse waiting to attack women. We need to sound the alarm.
Oh, God, he was right. She nodded.
Danny took out his mobile and called 999. He bought her a lemonade and sat her on a nearby bench.
Wait here. He started to walk away.
Where are you going?
Where do you think?
He headed for the funhouse. Tara sighed, leaned back and tried to ignore the flush of pleasure rippling through her from Danny morphing into the protector. She was no damsel in distress. But still, she had been alone so long it was a nice feeling.
Danny came back, shaking his head. They're gone.
They sat in silence until the guards arrived. There were two of them, and they started right in.
What kind of gloves?
Thick, leather,
Tara said. The memory gave her goosebumps.
Just like everyone wears in the peak of summer,
Danny deadpanned. He seemed to be taking this more seriously than the guards, although they did shut down the funhouse, and nearby rubbish bins were being checked.
There are no cameras inside, the guard said. But we'll be posting guards there when it reopens, and we'll tack a warning sign at the door so that no one goes in alone.
When they were done questioning her, Danny took her hand and led her to the waiting charter bus.
You're asking a lot of questions around here, he said quietly. Are you sure that's a good idea?
What if they never find my uncle? What if they never catch the murderer?
You can't control that.
But everyone has made their mind up about him. The guards are only looking for him because they think he killed Emmett Walsh.
And you feel what? Some kind of family obligation?
Yes, I do.
You won't be good to anyone if you get yourself killed.
But it means I'm on to something, don't you think?
You're saying whoever attacked you has something to do with Emmett's murder?
Maybe someone is worried about what I'll find out if I keep looking.
Even more reason to stop. You're not trained for this.
Danny's voice was tinged with worry.
Maybe he was right. Maybe everyone was right.
Maybe she should start thinking about booking a flight back home. That evening, Tara settled onto the sofa in the cottage with her cup of tea and scone, watching the fire crackle, holding the envelope from her mother in her hands. She'd probably never get an opportunity like this again, a chance to connect with her mom by reading her own words. She noted the date on the envelope. It was mailed 3 years ago in June. It took Tara a moment to realize why the date was significant, and when she did, she dropped the envelope onto the coffee table and stared at it, as if it could strike out at her. She knew what the letter was, what it said, why her mother had sent it. Had she sent one to Johnny as well? Yes, she would have. Why was Grace showing this to her? Did her mother send a follow-up? Yes, she would have done that too. Tara couldn't face it. She didn't have to read it. Why were people so awkward? She was tempted to storm over to the inn with the letter and confront Grace's cruelty. Was this Grace's last-ditch attempt to convince Tara to go home? She had another think coming. Maybe there would be a day, a year, a decade when Tara could bring herself to read it. Today was not that day. It took everything she had not to burn the letter in the fireplace. Instead, she tucked it onto one of Johnny's shelves behind an old tin. She had her card reading with Rose in the morning. Then she planned on visiting the tattoo parlour and Alana's cookery school. Rain began to beat on the windows, making her sleepy. She heard a crack outside the window. Was there someone at the door? She looked around. There was no poker by the fireplace that could double as a weapon. 46 of them back at the warehouse, he couldn't bring one home. There were no cast iron items either. Tara was forced to get a knife from the kitchen. She held it in front of her, heart pounding, as she headed for the window near the door. She turned off the inside lights, waited for her eyes to adjust, and peeked out the curtain. She saw the horse-like body pacing in front of the door. She nearly crumpled with relief. Hound! She unlocked the door, and to her surprise, he trotted right in and immediately curled up on a rug near the fireplace. She double-checked the locks on the door, curled up on the sofa, and stared at the dancing flames until they, the beating rain, and the gentle snore of the wolfhound swiftly lulled her to sleep. Tara arrived at the caravan early. Most of the paint cans were still lined up where she had first seen them. There were 6 in total, but there was a gap between the 3rd and 5th ones. She walked over and peered down. All that was left was a ring where the can once sat and a faint circle of black. Whoever had painted the side of her mill had taken the paint can from here. Anyone could have walked up and snatched one. Did that exclude Rose? Should Tara assume that was too obvious? Or was Rose flaunting the fact that she had done it? After all, the rest of the cans were still there, hiding in plain sight. The door to the caravan swung open at exactly 8:30. Rose led Tara directly to her built-in table, where a stack of tarot cards waited. The interior was filled with candles and beaded curtains and little pots of African violets. Tara slid into the booth and waited. Rose had Tara cut the deck 3 times, then laid the cards face down in the shape of a cross. "Your mother is here," she said. The lines on her face looked like the road map of an interesting life. The word startled Tara. "What?" "I feel her around you." Tara concentrated on her breathing. If Rose was a con artist, she was going right for Tara's wounds. She had to be careful not to let her anger show. Everyone knew by now about Tara, and the fact that she had come here to spread her mother's ashes and meet her uncle. If she mentioned her son, Tara was afraid of what she might do. "What about my uncle?" she said, her tone coming out harsh. "Do you feel him around?" Rose's eyes grazed over the cards. "Things are not as they seem." "What does that mean?" Irritation flicked across Rose's face. "A message," she said. "He's left you a message. Her name written in blood on his wall. What is it?" Tara wasn't going to give her anything, especially encouragement. This woman knew something. She was sure of it. "You're not safe here." Her eyes flicked around the caravan as if someone might be looking. Except for the few candles and beaded curtains and violets, it looked like the inside of any RV a typical family planned on driving around the country. "I see a romance brewing," Rose said when she turned over the next card. "Is that what's keeping you here?" Tara felt heat come to her cheeks. "Speaking of romance, I heard you were sleeping with my uncle." Rose stopped moving, stopped blinking. She seemed for a time to stop breathing. When she looked up again, there were tears in her eyes. "They did this." "Who is they?" "This town." "The entire town did this?" "All his enemies, wanting him gone.
Ben Kelly, harassing him about the mill. Grace Quinn, always obsessed with the past. Carrick Murray and his blasted...
She stopped, as if startled she'd been speaking at all. Tara leaned in. Carrick Murray and his blasted what? Rose's lips moved, but words did not come out. She shook her head.
I'm trying to find my uncle, Tara said. My blood. Do you understand?
Rose nodded again.
Productions. His blasted productions.
Tara got the feeling she was not talking about the all-female version of Hamlet. The reading of the cards had been abandoned. Rose knew something. She wanted to tell. Tara just had to find the right way in.
The guards, Tara said. They think Johnny murdered Emmett Walsh. What do you think?
Rose shook her head, fear stamped on her face.
Then help me. What do you know? What are you hiding?
Rose swallowed.
2 days before Emmett was murdered, Johnny came to see me. He said he ran into Carrigan, was shocked at the treatment he received.
What treatment? Rose shook her head.
He was raving, hard to understand. He thought everyone hated him and was plotting against him.
She glanced around again.
I thought he was overreacting. Now it seems as if he was right.
Are you saying Carrigan killed Emmett?
I'm saying he has something to do with this whole thing. Somebody was out to get Johnny, or several somebodies. There are too many suspects.
Who are the other suspects?
Ben Kelly is another, plotting against him, demanding Johnny sell him the mill.
Tara knew she would only get so far questioning Ben Kelly. But it was starting to look like another visit to Carrick Murray was in order. Or maybe she should speak with some of the actors in his play. Hamlet, for one. She stood to leave, then turned to Rose.
Did you know you're missing a can of black paint?
Rose's face remained calm.
It's not my paint.
Whose is it?
Danny O'Donnell's.
Her head jerked to the side.
The gypsy painted on the outside of the caravan.
It's gorgeous. Rose smiled as if she knew a secret.
That's Danny's work.
Danny painted that?
She couldn't believe it. He never mentioned he was an artist, and quite a talented one. Was he doing anything with it?
She knew so little about him. Rose's mouth was still turned up in a smirk. Tara wanted to slap it off.
Do you know if he came back for the black paint?
I wish he'd take the rest of it. The cans are barely covered when it rains. I don't like chemicals soaking into the ground.
Tara thought it should be the least of her worries, not to mention Rose wasn't answering Tara's question directly.
Was that an answer in itself?
Why would Danny paint Go Home Yankee on the side of the mill, only to be the one to power wash it off? Was he playing some kind of game?
Maybe Carrick wasn't the only devilish one in town.
The devil you know.
I think you should go now, Rose said, gesturing to the door. Tara sat back down.
Do you think my uncle is still alive?
Rose pursed her lips, then nodded.
Where do you think he is?
I don't know. I think he's hiding. I think he feels he's in danger here.
His boat is missing.
What if he died at sea?
The fear poured out of Tara before she could stop it. Tears came into Rose's eyes.
I tried to warn him, just like I'm warning you.
Is it my fault if no one is listening?
Her plea seemed genuine, and for the first time, vulnerable.
Tell me about the last time you saw my uncle. Leave nothing out.
Shame crept into Rose's eyes.
Please,
Tara begged.
I might be the only one trying to help him.
Rose sighed.
I'll put on the kettle, she said.
When they were situated with tea and digestive biscuits, Rose began to talk. Chapter 14. It was 3 days before the murder. Rose found Johnny Meehan pacing in front of her caravan. He was wild-eyed with fury. Someone was stealing from his mill. He was sure of it. It started with a few minor things here or there. A poker for the fire. There were 47 in the collection. And then one day there were 46. A stained glass window from Italy. One of his favourite pieces. One that would fetch a tidy sum. Missing 1 week after he'd hung it in a prominent spot in the mill. And then a lion's head door knocker. He began to stay awake at the mill, never going home. Never going to sleep, roaming the grounds like a deranged security guard. Why didn't he just get a security system? Rose shook her head. It wasn't his way. Did he find anyone? He caught Alana tripping home with the lad one night, Rose said with a shrug. I suppose it's not against the law. Interesting. Would Rose have told her if it was Danny? Or was it okay for lads to trip home to bed with a partner, just not the lasses? Sexism aside, did Alana have a secret boyfriend or had this lad been the actress playing Hamlet? For a while, everything quietened down, until the banker from Manchester finally agreed to sell the pig. Johnny was over the moon. Travelled there himself. Why, I think that's the only time I ever heard of that Johnny Meehan set foot out of County Galway. Because Emmett paid him a lot of money for it? That and Emmett was obsessed. He was one of Johnny's best customers. Threatened to never buy from him again if he didn't get that pig. Johnny couldn't have that. Go on. Rose explained how Johnny had put Emmett Walsh's cast iron pig in his office, right on the desk. He had locked it up tight. When he returned, only hours later, it was gone. By the time Johnny came to me, he was spitting mad. Even accused me of stealing it. Why did he accuse you? He said I was one of the few people who knew about it. He was acting like a nutter. I told him so. Who else did he accuse? Danny, of course. He was so angry when he quit. Then he accused Alana, and of course her father. Do you know if he searched Alana's room at the mill? He did, of course. Didn't find a thing. Did he say what he planned on doing next? Rose pursed her lips, clasped her hands together tightly. He was going to dig. Tara wasn't sure she heard her correctly. Pardon? Rose's eyes radiated fear. He said he was going to dig and dig and dig until he caught the thieving bastards. She exhaled. I tried to read his cards. I've never seen such a sinister reading, death all around him. But when I told him this, he flew into an even bigger rage. Accused me of purposely giving him a bad reading, bilking him out of his money. I charged him for the reading. Of course I did. But I'm no thief. She slumped in the booth. I hate knowing our last words were so cross. I should have known something bad was brewing. Should have stopped him. Do you know where Emmett Walsh lived? Of course I do. Can you write down the address? What do you think you're going to do? Sneak into his house? You don't think the guards will be all over it? Tara sighed. Somehow this murder was connected to all the missing objects. She was relieved that Rose didn't appear to know that the head of the cast iron pig had been reeled up in the Galway Bay. At least the guards were keeping some things quiet. Do you know anything about the missing items from the mill? The pig? A cast iron harp? Harp? Rose stood hovering over Tara for a second, then turned and hurried to the back of the caravan. When she came back, slightly out of breath, she was holding a cast iron harp. Where did you get that? Tara said. It was a gift, Rose said. Johnny gave it to you? No, Rose said. That vile woman did. What vile woman? Rose dropped the harp on the table with a thunk, held her index finger up, then disappeared into the back of the caravan once more. Tara picked up the harp. It was awfully heavy. If someone swung this at a human head, the person would be dead. She hadn't touched it, but she imagined the cast iron pig had been equally heavy. Was that the murder weapon? She wondered if the guards knew by now. She wished she knew someone there. What about the young clerk at the Garda station? Brianna Cunningham. She seemed the friendly sort. Maybe Tara could pay her a visit, suggest a social activity. It would be nice to have a female friend of her own age around here. As she thought through her options, Tara's eyes landed on the pot of African violets on the sill. There was something wedged behind it. She had to stand up to get a good look. There, tucked behind the pot, was a pair of gloves. Leather gloves. Do they belong to Rose? Had she been the one to attack me in the funhouse? Before she could pick them up, the beaded curtains swished and knocked, and Rose returned with a piece of paper in her hand. Tara must have had a funny look on her face, for Rose stopped in her tracks.
What the devil is wrong with you now?
Don't look at the gloves.
Nothing. Out with it.
Fine. Tara snatched up the gloves. She smelled them. Unlike the ones in the funhouse, these smelled like soil.
My gardening gloves, Rose said. What about them?
Whoever attacked me in the funhouse was wearing leather gloves.
And you think it's me, do you now?
I don't know. You were in there.
You were following me? I saw you go in and I wanted to speak with you. You're starting to sound paranoid, just like your uncle.
I just think it's odd, using leather gloves in the summer to garden. Tara paused.
When you don't even have a garden.
Rose laughed, a trilling sound that took Tara by surprise. She'd never even seen the woman smile.
I potted that violet myself.
I'm just going to come out and ask you. Did you come up behind me in the funhouse with those gloves and slap your hand over my mouth? Rose studied her.
I went into the funhouse ahead of you. How would I suddenly be behind you like?
It was dark and confusing in there. You could have turned around. And why would I do that?
Perhaps since I didn't heed your earlier warning, you were trying to drive your point home?
If that's the case, I don't think it worked.
You haven't denied it.
Nor will I. Tara sighed. This was getting them nowhere. She glanced at the paper in Rose's hand.
What do you have for me?
Rose thrust the sheet of paper at her. It was cream-coloured stationery. Emerald letters were splashed across the top. Welcome to the Bay Inn. Next to it was a quaint sketch of the inn.
Danny sketched that as well, Rose said.
He's talented. Tara wondered why he wasn't trying harder to make a living at it, or why he had never mentioned it. Her eyes went back to the stationery.
This came with the harp, Rose said.
Tara read the message. An old harp for the old harpy. Chapter 15. Grace Quinn was the vile woman, and not only was her harp not missing, she was the one who had given it away, then asked Tara to find it. One explanation, of course, the saddest one, was that Grace Quinn was going senile. The only other plausible explanation was that Grace Quinn was playing some kind of game. But why? And to what end? Tara didn't want to wait to find out the answers. After leaving the caravan, she made a beeline for the inn. There was no one at the check-in desk. Rose had refused to give her the harp, but Tara had the note in her purse. She was dying to see what Grace would say about it, and why she had lied. The parlour doors were shut. It was so silent Tara could hear the ticking of a clock coming from some dusty corner.
Hello?
She stared at the cubby holes. All she had to do to get her hands on the key to room 301 was slip behind the counter.
Hello?
She called again. There was no reply. She would be quick. All she would do is look at the key. She hurried over to it before she could talk herself out of it. Now that she was no longer a guest, there was absolutely no good excuse for why she'd be behind the counter looking for keys. She reached her hand into the cubbyhole for room 301. It was empty. She glanced at all the other boxes. Had the key mistakenly been placed in the wrong slot? Someone could enter at any second. There was no time to search all the boxes. Was there a guest in room 301 now? Were the plumbers back fixing another leak? If the silence was any indication, there wasn't a soul in the inn at all. Tara returned to the other side of the counter. She stood there for a few more minutes debating her options. None of them appealed to her. So she walked out of the inn and headed for her usual cafe. She would cut back on the scones. Someday. Today was not that day. After a bite at the cafe, Tara headed for the salvage mill. The weather was holding out, but rain was predicted for the afternoon and evening. Tara was still ruminating over her meeting with Rose. Those leather gloves. Had she rolled them in soil after using them on her in the funhouse? Had she left them out deliberately to confuse Tara? Or had she forgotten they were there? There was a note from Danny on the door of the mill. He had taken Hound for a walk. Tara eyed the red bicycle. She could use some exercise too, especially while the weather was nice. She slipped into Johnny's office and opened his notebook. Nuns Island Experimental Theatre, Carrigmurray. Cookery, talk to A's instructor. Tattoo shop, Rose. Inishmore, talk to D. A trip to the Aran Islands was going to take some planning. And she didn't want to pop into the cookery school while Alana was there. So that left the tattoo shop. But there had to be several in Galway. Where should she start? She took out her smartphone and Googled. There were indeed several to choose from. Galway Bay Tattoo, G's Tattoo Studio, Galway Tattoos, Ink Fingers. Should she call each one and ask if Johnny Meehan had ever come in for a Rose tattoo? Given that he was wanted for murder, wouldn't that raise a few eyebrows? She was being lazy. This wasn't New York City, where it could take forever to get from one end of the city to the other. This was a compact city where she could easily visit every single tattoo parlor in the span of a few hours. She would get exercise, be out in the sun before the rain hit, and have a little ink adventure. She jotted down the addresses, put them into Google Maps, and planned her route. The first two shops hadn't yielded anything but glares and denials, but at the last one they'd pointed her to one that she hadn't found through Googling. Tattoo Dreams. When Tara checked the address and realized it was near Alana's cookery school, her excitement grew. The bike was hard to pedal, but at least she never worried about anyone stealing it. She leaned it against the outside of Tattoo Dreams and entered. The walls were covered with tattoo renderings. There were wolf heads and geometric sleeves and vines.